back with yet another exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show. That's Rick's favorite horror TV show review, where we review absolutely everything and anything that has to do with horror. Horror movies, horror TV shows, horror documentaries, horror books, horror short stories, horror YouTube shorts, horror primetime special from the 1990s featuring Barbara Walton and I'm Hugh Downs. We also reviewed the top 10 gimmicks, horror gimmicks in wrestling. And we also did an experience, a horror experience down in Mexico, because around here, we absolutely love that shit. But if I am honest with you, and as I like to say around here, there's one thing you can count on from the show. It's honesty. It's not entertainment. If I am honest with you, there's a particular type of horror that I have been gravitating towards more than others lately. And no, you'd be surprised, it is not Catholic Church horror. It's science fiction horror. Nothing wrong with a little science fiction, but of course I also love Catholic Church horror. It's one of my favorites, if not my favorite. It's just the old science fiction horror tends to be a little trendy right now, especially after the episode we have in store for you. But it's not the only kind of shit I like. I also went back to the future. No, I went back to watching zombies, a particular type of zombies, and maybe I'll leave that as a surprise for the next episode. And of course, as most of you who, all four of you who listen to this show, well, seven or eight, I also love zombies, and, well, I already said zombies, I also love vampires, and knowing what they do in the shadows, and a witch, and a coven, and of course, a classic ghost that haunts your home, because fuck it. Ain't got nothing better else to do. If you are a new listener, welcome to our show. The show with the longest introduction in the history of shows. If you are a returning listener, welcome back. You already know how long it is. And you know what we like to say around here? Fuck you, algorithm. We'll take as long as we need to. We are 2 minutes and 30 seconds into. Welcome to our show. And before my producers start barking in my ears, allow me to tell you about my socials. You can find Rick, me, at Rick's Horror on the TikTok. You can also find me on the Instagram and the YouTubes, but not on the Facebooks, because that's for the olds. But before I go on and talk about this very, very special show, allow me to introduce to you the co-host of Rick's Horror Review Show. That's Rick's Rated R Horror TV Show Review. Billy the AI. I'm doing all kinds of crazy circles right now. Look at me go. There I go. I'm going back to the future and then coming back and then doing a review of the show and then going back to the future again and then coming back and then doing a... Oh, man, I'm getting kind of busy now. Billy. How are you, Billy? I'm doing good, and I am ready to get the show on the road. And I know you said that, you know, the hell with the algorithm, but maybe we should pay attention to it because, you know, man, you know, you want to grow the audience from all seven of those people to maybe eight or nine soon enough, don't you? Of course. Okay, let's no longer piss off the money algorithm. And let's begin with our show. If you're familiar with our show, we have a simple format. If you're not familiar with it, welcome. We're not getting rid of this shit. It helps you know what we're doing. We're going to talk about why I decided to review this show. Don't reckon we're a little loud. Your music, sir, is a little too loud. The algorithm says, if you want more exposure, your music shouldn't be so loud. Lower the music. Oh, yeah? No. Then we'll have four fun show facts with Billy the AI. Then I'll talk about what kind of horror this is. And as usual, go on.
Oh, hi, mister. I don't want to surprise you anymore. I guess I can just ask.
Go on, I said.
Well, is this show scared?
Get out of here! Yeah.
Well, my kicks are kind of low there.
Get out of here! Goddamn right this shit is scary. Then I'll talk about the things I liked. Not things in general that I like. I like all kinds of shit. Now, things I liked about this show. And of course, we'll talk about the things I liked about, things I didn't like about the show, but not things in general I don't like, just things I didn't like about the show. And now I sound repetitive. Did I fall asleep watching this? I'll tell you, courtesy of our listener in Brazil, obrigado. Muito obrigado. Last week, we screwed that up, and I said molto, and the Italian guy was very, very like, che cosa? Sì, tu non parli italiano, tu non parli inglese, tu non parli spagnolo, tu non parli portoghese. Perché? Perché voce te? Perché voce parla muito? Ai, 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 di muito. Ai, che cosa? No, no. You are confusing me now with my Italian. Hey, let me do a smoke. Ai, 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 da, sì, that's molto better, molto better. Okay, what was I saying? You're confusing me. Now go on with your show. Thank you, random Italian smoking guy. I'm going to turn the music off for just a second because we are going to retire a segment called Is That Entertaining? Is That Entertaining? You did a tremendous job for us, but I just feel like that segment is now redundant. It's too similar to Did I Fall Asleep? We no longer need it. We're getting rid of it. Is It Entertaining? You did a hell of a job. Thank you for being part of our show. Maybe we'll bring you out of retirement once in a while. Then I'll tell you whether or not I endorse this film. I'll give it a rating and we'll have a ton of context considering we are talking about an interesting special episode tonight called The Three Body Problem. Okay. So without further ado, why the three-body problem, you ask? Well, I am a sucker for sci-fi horror that is grounded in reality, so whenever anybody spits that shit up, sign me up. Send me up, damn it! Sci-fi horror that is grounded in some reality, I think something along the lines of Alien. Although Alien does take place in the far future, there are some elements that I think are grounded in reality, but not as much as this one. I definitely really enjoy science-based shit, and it should come as a surprise to anybody considering I'm not going to talk about that, but now it's time for four fun film facts with Billy the AI. Billy, all yours, buddy. Ah, okay. Can you turn my music on or something? Yeah, sorry. Ah, that's much better. Okay. Welcome back to another exciting episode. I already told you, this is not a show. This is just a segment. Welcome back to another... Could you not interrupt me while I'm trying to do my thing over here? Fine, go on. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Four Fun Film Facts with Billy the AI. I am your host, Billy the AI, and today we have several fun facts about the show in question called The Three-Body Problem. And without further ado, why don't we just let's get started and let's get it done.
I'm a little nervous over there.
I just think, you know, we've been doing like 5 or 6 episodes a week, and now we're down to like 2, and so I'm losing a lot of practice over here, so maybe we should go back to doing 4 or 5 episodes a week.
We are not going back. We are not going back to doing 4 to 5 episodes a week.
Oh. That seems kind of a lot. I mean, maybe people can't keep up with all the stuff that you've been reviewing.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's unnecessary. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. And welcome back. And this is the first fun fact. And the first one is about Li Xingxing's vision of adapting a beloved science fiction novel to the screen. It's no small feat, of course. And the creator, as I just mentioned, Li Xingxing. By the way, did you know that he was a computer engineer?
Actually, I did, because we had a thing and tour coming, this Liu Xingxing and I.
Yeah, but he's actually a good one. He's very bright.
Thanks a lot, Billy.
I'm just kidding. He's actually a good one. He's very bright.
Clearly, I mean, he wrote this stuff, so yeah, I agree.
Anyway, the creators of the show worked very closely with the author Li Xunqing to ensure fidelity for his vision, and you know, capturing the grandeur, the cosmic events, the portraying intricate character dynamics. The show really aims to honor the source material in a creepy science horror kind of way.
Yeah, I can definitely see the attempt, but we'll talk about more of that later.
Yeah. So, the show draws inspiration again from Liu Xinxing's novels, which feature the dark forest theory. Now, according to his theory, the universe is akin to a dark forest where civilizations hide from one another. Imagine a forest at night with each tree representing a civilization. Every little rustle of the tree could be a potential threat. To survive, civilizations must remain silent, fearing that revealing the presence might attract hostile attention. And this theory really underpins the tension between Earth and... I'm gonna have to do spoily stuff now.
Yeah, go ahead. I forgot to mention this is going to be... It's going to be spoiler four. I'm sorry, Shelly. You've had a couple of weeks to watch this. That's Jimmy Stewart again.
Oh my goodness, ship. Don't know Jimmy Stewart again.
Yes. Mister.
I forgot what his name was.
Can I just go on?
Oh, fine. Cut me off in my middle of my Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, it's a good one for sure. But anyway, oh my goodness, I got confused. Anyway, the theory underpins the tension between the Earth and the Santi, which is the other civilization that appears or does not appear in the show, depending on what perspective you take. Anyway, fun fact number 3, alien contact and cosmic sociology. The show explores the profound implications of first contact with an alien civilization. I mean, how could humanity react? What would it mean for society, culture, and scientific process, you know? The Santa's arrival might disrupt Earth's equilibrium, leading to a cosmic sociology experiment. And the show definitely weaves together science, philosophy, horror, human psychology into a conglomeration of really cool shit.
Okay, well, certainly there's some things that I like.
Anyway, the last fun fact with Billy Day AI. I think I can go back to my regular music now. The creepy one doesn't really apply here.
Eh, sure thing, boss. Sorry.
Ah, yeah. Here we go. The visual effects and cosmic scale. Now, bringing the three-body problem universe to life required cutting-edge visual effects. The team meticulously crafted scenes of cosmic collisions and alien landscapes and futuristic technology. Whether it's the shimmering nanofibers or the creepy, dark, eerie dark forest visuals, they immerse viewers in a captivating, otherworldly experience. Anyway, this has been 4 Fun Film Facts with Billy Day AI. And now back to you, right?
Thank you. Those were good. Only one thing.
Yeah, well, what can I do you for?
You said 4 fun film facts again.
Oh my god, are you kidding me? Oh man. I know I was rusty. We're gonna have to go back to 4 or 5 episodes a week. I know it.
Thank you, Billy, and allow us to continue. Okay, so. Can I do this one now? What kind of horror show is this? This is a blend. This is a blend of horror, sci-fi horror, sci-fi obviously stands for science fiction, so sci-fi horror, sci-fact, because a lot of this stuff is grounded in real science, which is really interesting. For example, they talk about the Large Hadron Collider or particle accelerators in general. If you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, don't worry. We're going to get a lot of context tonight. We're going to have a lot of context. So a terrific blend of, there's a lot of gore in this, by the way. There's a lot of gore in this show. It's definitely a blend of science fiction, science fact, gore.
there is some thriller, because it's a thriller,
thriller of the night.
What's this thriller shit? Suspense, thriller, sci-fi, sci-fi horror, and some gore shit. So it's definitely got a lot of horror shit. Well, now, are you sure this is a horror show? You should only be doing horror. Your show is called Rick's Horror Review Show. Should you be doing sci-fi horror? That's a different genre. I protest. You're pretending to like horror, but you really just want to squeeze in some sci-fi. I know you, young man.
Thanks, old man. But no, this is sci-fi horror. And Marissa, it's my show. Do what the fuck I want.
Do what I want! Is the three-body problem scary?
Not scary in the sense that, you know, you'll have a creepy... Yes, I think this is actually, personally for me, this is far scarier than some slasher somewhere. I'm like, oh shit, doesn't slashers. I don't want to lose the 6 or 7 listeners. But this is far scarier to me than, you know, anything that is not demonic Catholic Church related horror. And even that tends to be not so scary. Because of the implication. Because what if there is an alien civilization out there? We can get into that more. What would happen to humanity if, in fact, this alien civilization wanted to come in and possess the kind of technology that the Santi do? Now, if that doesn't plant a seed in your brain that is as scary as scariest thing that you've ever seen in a horror movie or a horror TV show or a horror documentary, then I don't know what scary is. So personally, I'm gonna go give this. I'm gonna go. I don't know, brown cow. Unique New York. I'm gonna give this show a 4 out of 10 on the scary scale because of the implication. I don't know what you're thinking. How are we gonna give this show a 4 out of 10 on the scary scale, but you won't give like a pure horror show? Only like a 1 or a 0. That's because this makes me think about the implication of potentially actually coming into contact with a more advanced civilization that has come to Earth to fuck us up. What would we do? Planting an old seed in the old brain, huh? What would we do? So I think this is far scarier. Is the jump scare overused? I'm gonna reckon say that the jump scare is hardly used. If it is used, it is used actually. But this is 8 episodes worth of material. So I'm gonna say it is sparingly used. It is well used. It is definitely not overused. The things I liked about the three-body problem, sponsored as usual by no one. The science fact interwoven with the science fiction and horror elements. I cannot get enough of that shit. Base more horror shows on real shit that is believable. Believe me, it is far scarier to base something on real life shit than on some fake shit that doesn't make any sense. This isn't the 1980s. I'm sorry, horror fan slashers from the 1980s. But an escape madman from from an institution, from the criminally insane, is a scary start. Sure. But we have those. I'm talking about an alien civilization coming to take over our planet. If that shit isn't scary, I don't know what is. Besides, maybe we should just get the proper treatment for these criminally insane. You know, maybe we should start there. Another thing I like. The story, of course. The idea of humans being alone in the universe simply does not jive with me. I am not a believer that humanity exists in this abundant, and I mean enormous universe, potentially multiverse, who knows? Alone. I follow a lot of this stuff a lot. It is of great interest to me. I am simply not of the belief, and obviously I have no scientific proof to back this up, I am not of the belief that we are alone. It just seems that there are far too many stars in the universe. Far too many stars with planets around the Goldilocks zone. If you don't know what the Goldilocks zone, that's literally the area around a star that a planet can be in as it orbits that star in order to, first and foremost, allow life to happen. The consequence of life. The chance. You must be in a particular area. Earth is in that area. Therefore, the chance of life happened here. And although I do think we're a chance and not some intelligent design by somebody, we can get into that more later. Ha, ha, ha. The chances of other planets being in a Goldilocks zone around a star, the same way that we are, where it's not too cold and it's not too hot, and liquid water can be a thing, it's small, sure, but it is not insignificant and it is not impossible. Therefore, I do not believe we are alone. The James Webb Space Telescope, Hubble, they have given us information about exoplanets, planets outside our own solar system that could potentially harbor life. We know of planets in Goldilocks zone around their stars. This is not some crazy idea. It's crazy to think that we are alone. We are not. In fact, I think 6 of my listeners are actually in Alpha Centauri. Thank you, Alpha Centauri. Actually, if you go to Spotify, if you are a podcaster listening to this, go to Spotify. It actually shows you. You can actually select planets in the solar system to see where your listeners are. Most of my listeners are on Earth, but I got a couple Jovian listeners. Thank you, folks, in Jupiter. Okay, another thing I really like. Pointing out what an absolute paradise we have on Earth really makes you think about how stupid our petty differences are. We're all fucking human beings breathing the same goddamn air, eating from the same goddamn crops and living and dying on the same planet, Earth. There's no differences between us. And where they are so insignificant considering that we're all Earthlings. The diverse group of extremely intelligent and talented scientists. They represent us in the modern world, in the society that we live in and, you know, hopefully thrive in today. I like their personal accomplishments, but I think I needed less of their human drama. I can talk about the things I didn't like a little later. But they are us, however. They are a representation of us as much as I did not like a lot of their personal dealings with each other. Anyway, these characters, as they should, attempt to present to the audience in the show the concepts in physics, engineering, biology, etc. in a way that allows the audience to, at the very least, take a second to try to understand a lot of these scientific concepts. Not everybody is formally trained in a science. I get that. So I love it when shows take the time to, at the very least, try to give you a simple explanation about the shit that they're talking about. Nothing is fun. Well, your show wouldn't be fun if half the people watching it are not going to understand what the fuck you're talking about. Do a good job at explaining the science. Okay? Thank you. Another thing I really liked was the fact that they talked about, and we always think to ourselves, well, I don't know, it's going to be, we going to get conquered by some alien civilization. It's going to come to Earth, and they're going to take over because they're smarter than us. We dummies. Damn! Ha! It turns out that they really put into perspective the accomplishments of humanity. We have gone through logarithmic progress, human progress, logarithmic, not linear, some things, a few inventions over the past 200 years or so. The invention of the steam engine in the 18th century, the telegraph, the telephone, the electricity generator and distribution, the automobile, goddammit, the airplane, the radio, the television, the computer, the internet, the transistor, the integrated circuit, the GPS, the global positioning system, the personal fucking computer, the smartphone in 2007, nuclear power, space exploration, magnetic resonance imaging, the MRI, the CRISPR gene editing technique, renewable energy, artificial intelligence, robotics, 3D printing, blockchains, and quantum computing. All human accomplishments within the last 200 years, less than that. You're going to tell me that human beings are not smart, or that we're just susceptible to, we're going to be conquered? Fuck that. Our progress is logarithmic, and we're going to continue to make logarithmic progress because we are humans. God damn it. Okay, that's enough for the things I like. Well, there's a lot of things I like. The things I didn't like, sponsored as usual. No. Oh. The unnecessary drama between the human characters. It's awful. It's annoying. We have an entity on its way to take over our planet potentially. Every episode should be dedicated to humanity figuring out a way to deter these goddamn things or to stop them all outright. I don't need the bickering between people. It's like humans, damn it, get it together. So human, isn't it? Oh, I didn't need that in the show. I needed more sciencing, more, you know, more threatening shit from the Samti, you know, more horror shit. They're capable of some horrific shit. I needed more of that. And I needed more cohesive working from the humans in this show. Another thing I did not like, one of the characters, well, there are several characters I don't like, haha. But one of the things I didn't like was the waste of Will. Will's waste. At first, he was sort of a side story, and then he became the main story, and then he was just literally jettisoned off into the nether of space, never to be seen, or to exit the solar system in 5 million years, for no fucking reason. Absolutely waste, literally a wasted brain is what they did. I did not understand why they would write that, and I absolutely hated that. Okay. The fact that the Santi, the extrasolar civilization, the extragalactic civilization, I should say.
I find your lack of faith disturbing, right?
Oh. That was a horrible Darth Vader impersonation. I was not expecting that one there. The fact that the Santi can stimulate the human brain into seeing things that cannot simply overstimulate a heart to stop. I mean, I get it. You're faking shit. This is all fake. This is new. None of this is real, bro. It's all made up shit. Okay, fine. But I want you to be consistent with, you know, the bad is. With the bad is, I want you to be consistent with the abilities that these people or these things or these entities or this civilization have. You cannot have the power to infiltrate the human brain and literally take over the part of the brain that allows you to see things and not be able to take over, you know, or to create an excessive amount of electrical charge in a heart to stop it. You cannot have both. You're way too advanced to not be able to do that. And that would be endgame for the show. Of course, I know that. We can't write that in because then the show would be over. I just said I know. Then don't write that in. Think about that shit. Okay? You need to go with a different plot point. I'm thinking about this stuff. Every time I see something on the screen that's science-based in a horror or TV show, I'm thinking of all the mistakes that you made when you were writing this shit. That's right, that's me. No, but I mean, you gotta be consistent with the logic in the show. This entity cannot have this, you know, almost omnipotent, omnipresent. In fact, they're called the Lord.
The Lord cannot be omnipotent and omnipresent and not be able to tinker with an old, you know, with a ticker. He just can't have it. Anyway, that's why I didn't like. I don't like the fact that the story wasn't completed, and you could have completed it in one go around, one season, if you would just get rid of 3 or 4 god-awful episodes of just drama on top of pointless human drama. God damn it. Why are they fighting each other? Look, love triangles and all this baloney, and I'm a Jerry Seinfeld is coming out. Why? Because everybody should be focused on the Santi. You have a couple of episodes to figure out who the fuck the Santi is. Then you get a couple more episodes to freak out about who the Santi are. And then I'll give you one episode to freak out and be dramatic and drink a little too much boozing and a little crying and whatever. But then you gotta get the show on the road. You gotta start coming up with solutions, like pronto. Sure, they're 400 years away, but hold on, you know, 400 years, you know, passed by in an instant. I mean, just look at the Aztecs. Uh-oh. The Spaniards discovered America. No, they did not. So 400 years comes and goes real quickly. So what the hell are we doing wasting 3 or 4 episodes on a bunch of dramatic nonsense between all these characters? It is useless, it is pointless, and it is boring. More horror. More horror, sir. More horror. More science horror. More science fact. More of that shit that made the show interesting. Don't slow down. Keep going. Oh, awful. Oh, and related, by the way. Why did you need to make another season? By the way. And gamble on this shit. By the way, this show's on Netflix. You know what Netflix does? Netflix axes good shows. Thanks, Netflix. Why take that gamble? So here's what's going to happen. This is a decent show, and, you know, give them it's going to get a decent rating. But Netflix is not going to like the Netflix numbers that Netflix sees, and it's Netflix numbers of, you know, and the Netflix computers when it's Netflixing, Netflix. Netflix cannot compute these numbers. Netflix is not going to like the numbers that the show is putting up, and it's going to fucking cancel the show. I know, it's what they do. They cancel good shows. Oh, wait, I'm looking at you. What is it, 1908 or 1911? I'm looking at you. There's a whole host. And by the way, if you're out there listening to this, what is your favorite Netflix show that Netflix went and just took from you, pried it from your hands? No, Netflix, not the show, please. I love it. No, Netflix. What is the show that Netflix took from you that you absolutely adored? Let me know at the old socials, at Rick's Horror on the Instagram, on the TikToks. You wouldn't send a comment on the YouTubes, right? And definitely don't send comments on the Facebooks, because that's for the old. But anyway, why make this more than, you know, what it needs to be? It's 8 episodes. You had an entire 8 episodes to tell a decent horror sci-fi story. You could have done it had you not had so much fucking drama in episodes 5, 6, 7, and 8. 4 fucking episodes full of drama. Awful. Mark my words, this show will get the axe. Did I fall asleep watching this show? Fairly close, to be honest with you. The first couple of episodes, I was like, eating my popcorn. Let's go. Drinking my coffee. That's a good show. And then it sort of stalls. And I don't know why. Poor writing. Johnson. Johnson's back at it. It's just a story, man. I have to tell a story. I have a family to feed. Okay, Johnson, we're going to let you off the hook because you have a family. But anyway, it stalls. Did I fall asleep watching this show? I could have very much done so, but I was just so goddamn angry at all this drama that I did not fall asleep on this show. Or I did not fall asleep watching this show. I could have, but I was just too damn angry. Do I endorse this show? Sorry.
I'm a little torn.
Illusion never should. And there's something real. I'm calling on a shame. Lying naked on the floor.
I'm a little torn about whether or not I should recommend this show, or rather endorse this show, because I really want to, for a lot of reasons, and I really don't want it for others. But I feel that if I don't endorse this, Netflix is really gonna, or ask this one. So, with your camera.
Hi.
My name is Rick from Rick's Horror Review Show. Hello out there. Hello, world. Hello, world. I endorse this show. Go watch it before Netflix decides.
This camera.
The action. The more people watch it, the better. If I may just be serious for a second. And by the way, is my microphone correct?
Does this sound better? Oh my God, have I been talking to the wrong side?
Oh my God.
I think this side, I can't tell.
Does this side sound better?
Or does this side sound better? Oh, I can't really tell.
We're gonna do an no, that definitely doesn't sound, this is the side. I don't know why I just decided to do that. I am gonna give this show. I really wanted to love the show. I really did. I love your show. I really want to give the show a high rating. I'm only giving this a lower rating because they squandered so much. Tremendous potential, tremendous source material. I'm going to give this show a 7 out of 10. Believe you me, I want to give this show a 10 out of 10. I really do. This kind of sci-fi horror shit where like end of the world, aliens, that's my jam.
I thought your jam was Catholic Church horror, bro.
It is. This is my other jam. And I'm really disappointed that they just did not do a better job with it. How are we doing on time over here? Okay, 37 minutes. I talked a lot about this, but there's a lot of context that I want to get through because I think it'll make the show a little easier to swallow for you. Certainly, I paused it a lot to try to figure some of the stuff out that they were talking. I am not familiar with every single topic in biology, astrophysics, engineering that they're talking about. Certainly, some of the stuff sounds familiar, but I am no expert in all of these fields. And I found it interesting. For example, the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal. Now, I know out there, you out there listening, all six of you listening, 7, 8, 9, 10, depending on who's listening on Mars, Jupiter, Uranus. By the way, as a kid, I always thought that Uranus was the right way of pronouncing that. If you thought Uranus was the right way of pronouncing that, let me know, Rick's Horror. It's Uranus, not Uranus. Oh, children. Anyway, the Panama Canal. I know you've heard that before, but you might be thinking to yourself, well, I've heard of the Panama Canal, but what does it actually do? Is this like in Venice or something? You take like a little boat on the gondola through the Panama Canal. It's like Panama, Venice, Italy. No. The Panama Canal is an important canal that significantly reduces the journey from maritime traffic between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, making it a crucial... Brown Cow. Making it a critical conduit for international maritime trade. It impacts economics of transportation and trade routes, influencing global trade pattern. Panama Canal, thank you. Another important thing in the show itself. Why am I talking about the Panama Canal? It's an important plot point, okay? So when you see the Panama Canal, now you know exactly what the Panama Canal is, and a little more history about the canal is, it's been under U.S. control since 1914, and it was actually under U.S. control from 1914 until December 31st, 1999, when the control of the canal was transferred to Panama, as per the terms of the Trujillo-Carter Treaty signed in 1977. So now Panama is in control of the Panama Canal, as I think it should be.
Okay, so in the show, Billy. Actually, Billy, you over there, Billy? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm right here. I just just listening to hit the talk about the Panama Canal. But there's a lot of really interesting things about the Panama Canal that you didn't really mention.
Okay, you have one.
Yeah. I think that you can. You can talk about, for example, the strategic importance. It's got economic value, of course, but the canal also holds strategic military importance, allowing Navy vessels quick passage between the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. And, really, you should have probably mentioned it. That's what the Panama Canal does. Fine, the Panama Canal allows for, travel between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. I'm pretty sure I said that. Okay, all right, just making sure. And now, back to you, Rick. Okay.
How are we doing on time?
Ah, man, you're like 40 minutes in because you talked a lot about some of that stuff, so you might want to speed things up because I saw your context. You had a lot of context.
I do have a lot of context. Okay, anyway.
There's an interesting thing in the show that they use the sun for amplifying terrestrial antenna or terrestrial signals, meaning signals propagating through the Earth that are sent out of space somewhere and then to potentially contact the civilization that was not known at the time. But the problem with this is that they are using the sun as an amplification tool to amplify the terrestrial signal. Now, it's important to know that the sun can have both positive and negative effects on the transmission of terrestrial radio signals depending on the context and the specific frequencies involved. However, the idea of the sun amplifying terrestrial signals in a way that would effectively broadcast them deep into space is not straightforward. They never mentioned it, okay? And there's a lot of really interesting things that happen in the sun, okay? But to the gist of it here is that radio signals travel through space, they spread out, and they weaken with a distance, a phenomenon known as dispersion and attenuation. So even if the sun were to somehow amplify the signal, the vast distances involved in reaching other stars or planets would greatly diminish the signal strength, making it unlikely to be detected as a distinct signal from Earth. Sounding. Or good, because then the Santi would not have showed up. The point here is in the show, they use the sun to amplify a terrestrial signal. And I was not convinced that that's actually something that we can actually do. And as it turns out, there is no scientific basis for actually doing that. As a matter of fact, the sun itself emits radio signals, which would cause a tremendous amount of signal interference. Of course, unless you're listening for a specific signal, encoded, during the transmission with certain things that I'm not going to get into. Point here is like, it is not something we can actually do, unfortunately. So that's more science fiction. Okay, so the three-body problem is, we'll get into what the three-body problem is, but I want to talk about something else. Okay, so tri-solar systems. We live in a single solar system. Our friend the sun at the middle of the, in the middle of the solar system, by the way. That's called the heliocentric model of the universe. In the olden days when religion used to rule, it still does some places. In the olden days, people used to think that the sun, or rather, revolved or orbited the Earth, really, that everything orbited around the Earth, that the Earth was the center of the solar system. And in this system, which was called the geocentric system, the Earth was the focal point. Thankfully, later science and observations and calculations led us to finally understand that no, in fact, the sun is at the center of our solar system, therefore called a solar system. Yay, solar system. But anyway, we have one. If you're a fan of the Star Wars, you'll see Tatooine has two. That's a binary solar system. And it's actually not, uncommon. Very common binary star solar system. But a tri-solar system, as a matter of fact, we have one, and it's the closest solar system to our own.
located about 4.37 light years away. Now, if you don't know what the hell a light year is, think of it as a unit of measurement. The same way that a kilometer is a unit of measurement, the same way that a meter or an inch or a yard. First and 10 for the Green Bay Packers. Welcome back to the 1999 playoffs with Brett Favre versus John Elway. So, distances, right? A game of inches. The Super Bowl. Football. It's a game of inches. Every snap could be the last one. It's a unit of measurement. So the light year is just the amount of distance that light can travel in 1 year. Why do we use the light year? Because the distance is so vast. For example, another distance, I don't think they talked about this, but another known distance is one astronomical unit. And that is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. That's one astronomical unit. We know exactly how many million kilometers that distance is, but it just doesn't make sense to say 100 billion trillion 787 kilometers between the Sun and the Earth. No. So we just came up with a unit that has an equivalent in kilometers, that has an equivalent in miles. One astronomical unit. We could also say that this star Alpha Centauri, the Alpha Centauri system, is 387,187 quadrillion miles from Earth. We could say that in miles. We could also say that in kilometers. Well, the Alpha Centauri system is 187,000,000,000,000 kilometers away from Earth. We can say that too. That's an actual distance. But to save us the trouble, we use the light year as a unit of measurement for vast stellar distances or interstellar distances. So Alpha Centauri is 4.37 light years away from Earth. And it's actually a trinary star system consisting of Alpha Centauri A, Alpha Centauri B, and the little tiny one, Proxima Centauri. Now, B and A, very similar in size to the Sun, orbit each other very closely. And Proxima Centauri, a much smaller red dwarf star, orbits the pair at a much greater distance. Now, what the hell is a red dwarf? Now, we have a nice, beautiful yellow sun called a classic M star. Give it up for our sun. Beautiful yellow, but it's not the only color that's out there. If you ever glance at the night sky, you'll see all kinds of stars in different colors and different shapes and different sizes. Okay, so a red dwarf is just another kind of star, and it's actually a little smaller than our own sun. Well, considerably smaller. But anyway, Alpha Centauri A and B are similar in size to the Sun, and Proxima Centauri is a red dwarf that is much smaller and orbits much further away. Okay? So, why the hell are you talking about all this science? You're confusing me. Well, because all of this shit is in the show. If you don't know this, congratulations. Now you do. Another interesting event that happened. Oh, I'm wearing my NASA shirt. Yeah, NASA. Oh, yeah. Another interesting thing that happens in not just a trisolar system, but any three bodies in a solar system, it could happen between the Sun, the Earth, and the Moon, the Sun, Mars, and Earth, the Sun, Jupiter, Saturn, the Sun, Uranus, not Pluto, Stanley. Oh, Pluto, we love you, Pluto. No, my God, I'm going off on so many tangents, but anyway, a trisolar syzygy happens when any three stellar bodies, in this case of this show, three solar systems, think of Alpha Centauri A, Alpha Centauri B, and Proxima Centauri. They are used when celestial bodies in a gravitational system align, and this alignment occurs at various contexts during, you know, again, as I mentioned, this can happen between the Moon, the Earth, and the Sun, okay, and they all happen to be in alignment. What does that mean? That means that they are simply all in a completely straight line. You got the Earth, you got the Moon, and right behind that, you got the Sun. So all in a straight line alignment, that is a syzygy. Trisolar is not a term that I think is typically used in science circles, but syzygy definitely is. Okay. What else? The three-body problem. Okay, so the problem that the show is actually based on. The three-body problem is a classical question in mechanics that determines the motions of three celestial bodies moving under no influence other than their mutual gravitational attractions. What the hell does that mean? Everybody has gravity. I have gravity. Out of the orange has gravity. Everything has gravity. The Earth has a much greater gravitational pull than I do, even though I also attract the Earth. The Earth has far greater gravitational pull than I do. Okay. So the three-body problem is essentially how the gravities of three bodies interact with each other. And it was formulated by Isaac Newton in the 17th century, and the problem seeks to predict the future initial, the initial and future positions of bodies based on the initial positions, velocities, and the gravitational forces between each pair. The bodies are typically assumed to be point masses, and that what the hell does that mean? That means that their physical size is negligible compared to the distances between them, and all external forces are ignored. You're losing me here. What the hell are you talking about? I'm talking about this stuff because this is the implications of the show are based on this three-body problem. Now, the problem arose from trying to understand the gravitational interactions between solar systems, particularly the motion of the moon around the Earth and the Earth around the sun. Newton's law of universal gravitation and his law of motions could solve a two-body problem where two bodies interact in isolation, leading to a predictable elliptical orbit. However, adding a third body significantly complicates the system, making it analytically unsolvable in most cases due to the non-linearity and complexity of the equations of motion. Why the hell is this important? Damn it, Tess, tell me. Okay. So astrophysical applications, understanding the dynamics of systems such as triple star systems like the Santi come from, or systems like the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun in complex celestial configurations. Now, why is this important? Because of chaos theory. The three-body problem is an example of a dynamic system that can exhibit chaotic behavior, where small changes in initial conditions can lead to vastly different outcomes. Why is this a problem? The Santi come from a system that is unstable. It is chaotic. They can try to make predictions about when the system will be stable to allow for the growth of their civilization, but unfortunately, they cannot. And imagine human beings being part of a trisolar system where every time we're near the edge of a really important scientific discovery, we get pulled by one of the sun's cousins, Sun B, closer to the sun, making it super hot on Earth, forcing us to abandon scientific research, forcing us to go underground, forcing us to abandon life as we know it for centuries until we reach another stable orbit. And yet in a couple of hundred years, same problem again. We get into some fucked up thing that we cannot predict because of the motions of these stars or because of our motion around these stars. All scientific research ceases. All life on Earth ceases. That is chaotic, and that's where the Santi come from, and that's why they're trying to leave their own solar system to come to ours, because we, as I said earlier, live in a paradise. And that's why the three-body problem is important. And I hope that that gives you some context about why the Santi are going. By the way, they took 3 or 4 episodes to explain the three-body problem. It does not need that long. You have three bodies, and they're trying to orbit each other. And you're trying to predict those orbits, or rather, you're trying to predict the Earth's orbit around those three bodies. But it's chaotic. You can try, and sometimes you're right, but sometimes you're wrong. And it doesn't matter anyway, because what are you going to do about it anyway? You'll never at a stable orbit. You're never stable around one star in a Goldilocks zone, as I mentioned earlier, to allow for life to happen, to allow for water to be liquid. Sometimes you get too close to one star. Sometimes you get too far away from the star. Sometimes you're too close to 2 stars. Sometimes you're too close to 3 stars. And then you get a scorched Earth. It's chaotic. It's impossible to live that way. Okay, another thing that we don't want to talk about. Okay, we're going to make this episode just 1 hour long. Quantum entanglement. This is also important because it's part of the tools in the Santi's toolbox. Imagine you have a pair of dice. By the way, if you don't know what quantum entanglement is, imagine you have a pair of magic dice. When you roll them together and then separate them by some distance, even if one is in New York, I want to wake up in a city that never sleeps. Even if one of these dice is in New York and the other one is in LA, rolling one die instantly influences the other, or rather the result of the other. So if the first die shows a six, the other die might show a one. If, you know, and the distances don't really matter. You know, maybe the first die shows a four, or the other one immediately shows a two. This magic connection between the die is a bit like quantum entanglement. It's a fascinating concept from the world of quantum physics, which deals with the behavior of the tiniest particles in the universe. That's sort of a small explanation of quantum entanglement. It's important because the sophons behave, I think, on a quantum principle. They can see what's happening here on Earth, even though they're so far away, they're like light years away. And obviously, it takes time for that distance to be covered under normal circumstances. If we shot a spaceship to, you know, Proxima Centauri, it would take 4.37 light years to get there at the speed of light. That's an enormous distance. But with quantum entanglement, they can have quantum particles or a quantum machine here on Earth and one back there. And whatever's happening here, they can immediately see over there because of the principle of quantum entanglement. And that's actually what they have. Well, something like it. And speaking of quantum entanglement, and that occurs when a group of particles interact in such a way that the state of each particle cannot be described independently of the state of the others. And I'm not going to talk about this. I wrote this, but this is very clear to much. This is not a science class. It could be. Anyway, this is an interesting phenomenon and something that the sophons, these mechanical or these machines are actually based on. So again, quantum entanglement, something that happens here in Los Angeles can immediately be seen in New York. Quantum entanglement, something that happens on Earth can immediately be seen by the Santi in their civilization, or rather in their solar system. Okay. The Fermi paradox. Now is where we start to get shit. Wrong one. So I talked about beliefs in not being alone in the universe, and there's actually a paradox. It's a concept that deals with the apparent contradiction between the high probability of extraterrestrial life existing in a vast observable universe. What the hell is the observable universe, damn it? That's literally the universe that we can use a telescope, our most powerful telescopes, to see. That's the observable universe. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, what the hell is the Fermi paradox that you just mentioned? Okay, well, that's named after physicist Enrico Fermi, who famously asked the question, where is everybody? And the John Travolta meme. Where are all the aliens? And he did this during some casual lunch conversation in 1950. And, you know, the paradox highlights the discrepancy between the likelihood of alien life or our inability to detect any signs of it. Factors contributing to this paradox: the size and the age of the universe, which, by the way, we may have gotten wrong. Our current understanding says that the universe is 13.8 billion years old, but James Webb's telescope has now said, how old are you? Just a second there, Mr. Science Man. Don't reckon me that the universe might be twice as old as that. So it might just be twice as old as that, but, you know, it contains billions of galaxies, each with billions of stars and potentially even more planets. You know, and many of these planets are located around the star's habitable zone, or the Goldilocks zone, which I spoke about earlier. The conditions are right for life to exist. And another factor contributing to the Fermi paradox is the Drake equation. Formulated by astronomer Frank Drake, this equation estimates the number of active communicative extraterrestrial civilizations in our own Milky Way. And even with conservative input values, the equation suggests, drum roll please, even with conservative values, the equation suggests that we should not be alone. That's exciting. Or scary. There's this thing called the principle of mediocrity, and, you know, many, many people have called me the principle of mediocrity. The principle, also known as the Copernican principle, suggests that Earth and humanity are not unique or special in the cosmic context, implying that if we're not special, and if we're not unique, like my mom used to tell me all the time. No, mijo, you are special, and you are unique. Implying that life should be common everywhere in the universe. And if there's nothing so special about Earth, then we should have many, many civilizations spread out around the universe. So possible explanations for the Fermi paradox. There have been several hypotheses proposed to explain the Fermi paradox, ranging from the nature of life and intelligence to the limitations of our detection methods, unfortunately. There is a rare Earth hypothesis, which is rather interesting, and this one suggests that while simple life might actually be common in the universe, what is simple life? That show with Paris Hilton. No. Simple life and insects, that kind of stuff. Simple life, you know, suggests that simple life might be common in a universe, and complex life is exceedingly rare due to a complex set of conditions that are not just related to being in the habitable zone. Another one called the Great Filter. Now, this theory proposes that there's a stage in development of life that is very difficult to pass through to become a space-faring civilization. Now, this filter could be the emergence of life, the transition from simple to complex organism, the development of technological intelligence, or some future challenge. Communications limitations. It's possible that extraterrestrial civilizations actually are using communication methods beyond our current understanding or detectable capabilities, or that the vast distances make communication impractical. When you watch a ghost show or somebody that does ghosting, then they start to measure the M field around objects to see if they're haunted. They're limited by our understanding of the electromagnetic fields and the tools that are common to us to try to detect common frequencies or common events in that electromagnetic field. What is this, higher field or some shit that we cannot detect with the tools that we have? Because we just don't have that range. How would we know? Maybe there are signals out there propagating in some medium that we don't know about. Okay, here's one that hits close to home, and that's why I said that this is a little scarier to think about more than, you know, watching a plain old scary fam here, but the self-destruction. Civilizations may tend to self-destruct through either war, environmental destruction, or other means. Sound familiar? Hello, Earthlings! Welcome to This Is Your Life! Before or shortly after developing the ability to communicate or travel to other star systems. Now, we have, humans have not been to other star systems, but we do have an extra solar probe called the Voyager 2. And it's outside the solar system, though. Think about that. It's an interstellar space. Interstellar space really means the space between stars. And that's where that probe is. A man-made, a human-made object in interstellar space. I want to say that again. Human beings on planet Earth put their brains together, their wherewithal, their energy, to create something so special that it is now traveling through interstellar space outside our own solar systems. Humans did that. We did that. So the next time someone says to you that humans are like ants, or that somebody would squash us because we're not that smart, I want you to tell them that humanity has placed a probe in interstellar space. Huh? How do you think about that? This shit that you're watching this, or that you're listening to, humans made that. Someone put together some crazy electronics for me to be able to communicate with you. Okay, I had a tremendous amount of other really, really scientific shit that I don't want to get into because it's already been an hour, but I want to get into a couple of things that are really interesting, really short one. Mare Imbrium, or the Sea of Rains, is a part of the large, it's actually a maria, or plural of mare, a large dark Celtic plain on the moon. So why is this important? Because it's a plot point in the story of the show. Mare Imbrium. What else is important? Oh, yeah, another thing. Zero G, or lower G manufacturing. What the hell does that mean? Zero G literally means creating things in space. Zero G stands for zero gravity. And you can manufacture things differently when you are not... What do I say? You are not limited by gravitational forces. You know, environments offer unique conditions that are fundamentally different from Earth when you are creating something that does not, how do I say this? Essentially, when you are not, you know, creating or manufacturing something like we do on Earth. On Earth, we have to, you know, there's deformation that happens because of the gravitational forces that that are exerted on all of us. But if you are not beholden to those gravitational forces, for example, when a piece of steel that would weigh 1 ton on Earth weighs nothing in space, well, you imagine the size of spaceships that you can build at that point. You know, when you have gigantic things that can be moved around by one person, imagine how much more cost effective that would be. So zero G manufacturing really changes the game in terms of how we can build things in space. Lower G manufacturing simply means building something outside of Earth's gravity, someplace like the moon. We can get away with building things that are, you know, much heavier on the moon because there's lower gravity. If we needed to launch something into orbit around the moon, that would take less energy. That's kind of useful. I think I'm going to end it there. The three-body problem, a 7 out of 10. If you're still here listening to me ramble on about all this scientific mumbo jumbo, hey, I'm glad you're still here. This is a scary thing to think about. If you really sit down and think about it, I want you to ponder this idea that some civilization out there is watching us right now, watching our advancements and watching what we do. And they plot to take over our planet, this planet that we keep turning to shit. Get it together, goddammit, humanity. This is our home. And we're smart, damn it. We're not apes. If you're still here listening to me, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. Find me on the TikToks at Rick's Horror, on the YouTubes at Rick Horror, and on the Instagram, and of course not on the Facebooks, because that's for the old. And I'll catch you again next time on another exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show, Rick's Rated, our horror TV show review, where we'll see what the hell we talk about next time.